I have a PowerPoint that I would like to do today, and so I'll ask our sound crew to get the title slide up there. But we'll get started with one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible. If you'll take your Bible and we'll all turn to James 1:27. In honor of Mr. Ellis, it's James 1:27. When I've referenced this scripture in past messages, I have focused on the first part. But today I would like to consider the end of that verse. So James 1:27, we read, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble." And then I usually stop there with some of the other messages that I've done before. I did one on the spiritual widow and talked about that. But today I would like to focus on the latter part of that. If we continue, it says, "And to keep oneself unspotted from the world." In spiritual terms, as Christians, we need to keep the world and the wicked, sinful ways of this world out of each of us as the temple of God. Paul confirms this is the case in 1 Corinthians 3:16. If you'll turn with me there as well. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 16. We'll read that as we reflect on how important this concept is, especially in the wokeism world in which we live today. So 1 Corinthians 3, we'll read verses 16 and 17. "Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you?" And in verse 17, "If anyone defies the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are." God takes that very seriously. And recently I discovered an interesting statement that I think reflects on this same intent of keeping all of the negative of the world from bringing or tearing you down and corrupting what God is creating in us as Christians. And that statement is noted in, hopefully the slide changed. Are we good? Nope. It's on. "Ships don't sink because of the water around them. Ships sink because of the water that gets in them." Don't let what's happening around you get inside of you and weigh you down. As I reflected on this statement, I thought about some of the famous and maybe not so famous ships that have sunk throughout history and what caused their demise. I would like to review what caused two of those ships from my memory to sink in my message today. The intent is to compare what causes ships to physically sink as an analogy for how to keep our spiritual ships from sinking. The most famous, probably a lot of you have already figured that one out, because of the 1997 Hollywood movie, is noted on slide 3. There we go. All right. Probably know which one that is. It was the Titanic, as seen here in the original photograph in 1911. Besides this movie that starred Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, there have been 6 other movies about the Titanic. I was amazed when I started to do the research on that. 6 other movies about the Titanic? Of course, that's the one we know because of Hollywood. And we see in slide 4 an artist color rendition of its sleek beauty. It really was a beautiful work of art in its time in the early 1900s. On April 4th, 1912, at 11:40 p.m., the Titanic sideswiped a massive iceberg and sank in less than 3 hours. One of the designers made the infamous statement at the launch of the Titanic. You may remember this one. "Not even God himself could sink this ship." What a stupid statement. Not even God himself. What an arrogant statement. Could sink this ship. As a result of the confidence of their unsinkable design, they installed less than half the lifeboats that were necessary to carry all of the passengers to safety in the event that the ship did sink. This, of course, contributed significantly to a greater loss of human life than if they would have planned for the worst. They weren't so arrogant in the first place. There seemed to be an arrogance from some of those employed by the White Star Line, as they were the prominent British shipping company of the day. They designed and launched one of the world's largest luxury liners of that era in the early 1900s. The Titanic was on her maiden voyage to the United States, carrying more than 2,200 passengers and crew when she foundered. And of those, only 705 aboard the Titanic reached their destination. After what seemed like a minor collision with an iceberg, the largest ship ever built sank in just under a fraction of the time that was estimated to be able to stay afloat in case something happened. That was 2 to 3 days. They estimated, because of the design, it's so incredible, if something catastrophic happened, 2 to 3 days. And then in slide 5, we see that there was a scientific investigation, now that we can get to the bottom of the seafloor and look over the Titanic and some of the wreckage. And we see that the iceberg created 6 longitudinal slits in the hull. Because of the ship's design and the materials chosen for construction, this somewhat minor impact quickly turned into damage to nearly 300 feet of the ship's hull. The collision allowed water to flood 6 of her 16 major watertight compartments. And according to an article, Cause and Effects of Rapid Sinking of Titanic, by Vicky Bassett, when the Titanic collided with the iceberg, the hull steel and the wrought iron rivets failed because of an engineering term, brittle fracture. A type of catastrophic failure in structural materials, brittle fracture occurs without prior plastic deformation and at extremely high speeds. The causes of brittle fracture include low temperature, high impact loading, and high sulfur content of the material. On the night of the Titanic disaster, all 3 of these were present and a factor in what happened to the ship. The water temperature was below freezing. The Titanic was traveling at a high rate of speed on impact with the iceberg, and the hull steel contained high levels of sulfur. Normally, the rivets would have deformed or moved, if you would, before failing because of their ductility. Ductility is the ability to flex or bend. But with the water temperatures below freezing, the rivets had become extremely brittle because of the surroundings. Another factor was the design of the watertight bulkheads. By midnight, water in the damaged compartments began to spill over, cascade over, if you will, into the next compartments. Because the compartments were guaranteed to be watertight when the ship was horizontal, the walls only extended a few feet above the waterline. And as you can see from slide 6, the Titanic did not stay horizontal very long. As soon as it started taking on water, it tipped up, and then it was just cascading over into the next wall and the next wall as it filled with water. Once again, the internals of the ship had design flaws or errors that caused it to sink more rapidly when in a vertical position. If the transverse bulkheads, the walls of the watertight compartments that are positioned within the width of the ship, had been a few feet taller or maybe gone to the roof line of each area, then it wouldn't have happened. They would have maybe got that additional time that they needed to call for help because there were other ships in the area that could help them. Consequently, the sinking would have been slowed. But however, because of the extensive flooding of the bow compartments and the subsequent flooding of the entire ship, the Titanic was gradually pulled below the waterline. Remember, they said it was 2 to 3 days was the design? In less than three hours, the ship went completely underwater and disappeared. What about Christians when we are hit by the external blows of this year, of this world, and face adversity and extreme trials in our lives? Trials like the death of a spouse, the death of a child or a parent, a divorce, a loss of custody of a child, a loss of a job and career, or any other potential life-changing events that many of us have gone through. All of these are external trials that can seemingly come out of nowhere and surprise us, just as the iceberg suddenly appeared in front of the Titanic. Do you have the solid, integral design from the faith of God that is so vital and necessary to deal with those trials and tribulations in life? These trials can sometimes cause us to doubt if God is really there for us. That can be complicated, certainly, with a lack of or sporadic prayer, Bible study, fasting, and meditation, when we can become very brittle spiritually in the cold and evil world in which we live. It is very similar to how the Titanic's rivets became brittle in the icy waters of the Atlantic. They lost their elasticity, their ability to bend or flex under pressure from the high-speed contact with the iceberg in the cold, below-freezing, frigid water. One of those areas that we need to be flexible in our lives, is our attitude. As noted earlier, there was an arrogance by the designers of the Titanic. The stiff-necked statement that not even God himself could sink this ship is an attitude that I think we find even more prevalent in the world today, in our highly technological age today. We see that in all of the churches around the world that have fewer people in them. Not necessarily our church, but other churches in the world that have fewer people all the time because they just don't need God. They have technology. They have Facebook. They have all of the different things they need, their computer, their smartphones, whatever it might be. God wants us to have a humble, teachable attitude and the realization that without him, which Mr. Ellis mentioned earlier in his message, we can do nothing. We can do nothing of our own, or we can live, we can survive for a while, but what if God took away all the oxygen? What if he took away the sunshine? We wouldn't live very long. We know our ship can sink, unlike those that designed and built the Titanic, because we know we can't arrive in the kingdom by our own efforts. It's simply impossible. Only by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and the grace of God can we stay afloat now in this ever-increasing evil, cold, cruel world and survive on to live forever in God's kingdom. God said it would not be easy, but he has given us the tools we need to succeed and the perfect example of his Son, Jesus Christ. Let's notice John 17, if you would please turn there with me. John 17, this is a passage that we read each year during the Passover service. John 17, we'll start in verse 14. John 17, 14, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. Christ prayed for us. As our elder brother, he kept himself separate from this world, as we continue and we see in verse 16. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. He lived in the world just as we do, but he was not of the world, as we are to also not be of. He showed us how to succeed in keeping the world out of our lives, to maintain the solid walls of a strong hull that will keep the cold world on the outside via faith in God and his love for us. We must be constantly on guard and prepared for the trials in life that can seemingly come out of nowhere, like the iceberg that popped up under the cover of darkness. You know, the lookouts of the Titanic had been alerted that there were potential icebergs in the area from other ships that had traveled through. They thought they were prepared. They even spotted the iceberg about 1/4 mile away, but they were traveling too fast to turn the ship completely before it struck a glancing blow to the bow side of the ship. Do you get caught up in the mess that is happening in this world around us today? The political strife in our federal, state, and local governments, the anger and hostility that's present in society, the latest thing that the Hollywood or the famous people are doing, the constant onslaught of bad news that we get through all the various media outlets. All of these and more can divert our attention from the more important part of allowing God to steer our ships through the treacherous waters of this world. Our duty is to be grounded in the truth with the faith and the courage, the fortitude and the vision to see God's kingdom and your part in it. Paul tells us in Romans 12:2, if you'll jot that in your notes, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. We are to resist this world and its pervasive negative influence, and we are to renew that mind. Certainly, weekly during the Sabbath day is an opportunity to renew that mind, but I think it needs to be daily in the world in which we live today. We need to have that prayer and that Bible study to renew our minds, to focus on the right things in life, and to basically push the negative out. God is giving us an opportunity to grow in faith by living His way of life. When we trust Him in the little things, as well as the big things at times, we'll live a life that reflects that trust that He has for us. God gives us faith through His Spirit, and the more that we put that faith into practice, the more the fruit of the Spirit will grow and blossom in our lives. Hebrews 11, verse 6 states, without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who are diligently seeking Him. And then Paul noted in Romans 10:7, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. And then in Ephesians 2, verses 8 through 9, by grace you have been saved through faith, that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast. You know, sometimes we may think we are strong in the faith. Then when challenged, we can suddenly double up under the pressure and be doubtful. Let's note the example of Peter in Matthew 14. One that we all know probably pretty well, Matthew 14. Matthew 14, we'll begin reading in verse 14. Matthew 14:14. And when Jesus went out to see a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them and healed their sick. And then in verse 15, when it was evening, his disciples came to him saying, this is a deserted place and the hour is already late. Send the multitudes away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves food. Christ healed the sick in that great multitude, which is estimated to be at approximately 5,000 men plus women and children. Christ directs his disciples then in verse 16 through 18. But Jesus said to them, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. And they said to him, we only have 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He said, bring them here to me. The context here is it looked like an absolutely impossible task to humans. And it was. It was for human beings, but not for the Son of God. Continuing in verse 19. Then he commanded the multitudes to sit on the grass, and he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up into heaven, he blessed them and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitudes. There were only 5 loaves and 2 fish, yet through a divine miracle, everyone was fed. And then we see there was even more leftovers than they started out with in verse 20. Note in verse 20, so they all ate and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets full of the fragments that remained. Absolute incredible miracle. How would you feel if you were one of the disciples there and had witnessed that miracle? Would you be elated? The term I think we use today is maybe a spiritual high when we're at the Feast of Tabernacles and we're enjoying all there is of that picturing of the millennial reign of Christ on this earth. We'd be so excited to be part of this wonderful experience with Christ as they were. Then in verse 22, he made the disciples get into a boat and go before him to the other side. So they parted ways just for a time. Now they were alone, but likely still discussing what had happened with the great excitement and anticipation on what other miraculous things that Christ might perform. Then let's pick it back up in verse 24. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. The sea became rough, and perhaps their excitement may have waned, and they most likely became very concerned. Then in verse 25 through 27, now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But then in verse 27, but immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I. Do not be afraid." Jesus once again quelled their fear by letting them know it was him, once again performing another miracle to help them, to help build faith in them. Peter became so impressed by this miracle he witnessed, he wanted to emulate his master and walk on the water as well, as we see in verse 28 and 29. And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And then in verse 29, and so he said, Christ said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. In all fairness, Peter allowed those things, the wind and the choppy seas around him, to frighten him, as we see if we read down to, if we start back in verse 30. But when he saw the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." In all fairness to Peter, and to his credit, when he started to doubt and falter, what did he do? Did he try to save himself? He knew it was hopeless. He couldn't save himself. He at least did what hopefully we all do when we're in really bad shape, a bad situation. He cried out to the one that could save him. Brethren, we must remember to also do the same. Let's note the conclusion of this section of Scripture by reading verses 32 and 33. And when they had got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Christ performed miracle after miracle for them to help them build their faith, with the last one taking away the storm as he and Peter climbed into the boat. After witnessing all these events, the disciples worshiped him, knowing that he was truly the Son of God. We need to develop this type of rock-solid belief and faith to weather the storms that are ahead of us in our lives. Several years ago, Mr. Franks gave a message that I remember. One of his points was that we are to look to God every day, not just on occasion. He encouraged us to do as the Father did in Mark 9:24. If you'll jot that down in your notes, Mark 9:24. When the Father said, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." We believe that we're strong at times, and then sometimes we get into trials and tribulations, and we can develop maybe some unbelief, maybe some doubt in what God says he'll do for us. We need to build our faith by asking God to help us recognize that he is there for us every single day of our lives. That is how you outfit the internals of your spiritual ship to face the adversity of storms or trials that we will all encounter in the future. Well, we've looked at the Titanic, one of the most famous ships, and how it sank. But there was another one that was not so famous that sank off the coast of South Africa In August of 1991, my wife and I, as well as several members in the Houston North congregation, those that are still around today are Catherine Schubel and T.N. Hewitt, who was a little girl at the time, sailed on that very same ship 2 years prior to its sinking. We were on the church-sponsored Greek cruise during the Feast of Tabernacles. Is there anyone else here that was on the Greek Epirotiki line, the ship, the Oceanus, in 1989? Anyone? Anyone? No? Okay. You'll just have to believe me then. You'll have to trust me. If so, this picture in slide 7 should look very familiar to you. Yes, and there it is. The Oceanus set out from the port of East London en route to Durban with 581 passengers and crew aboard on Saturday, August 3rd, 1991. That was about, it's a smaller cruise ship, but that was about the extent of what we had as far as the number of people at the feast that year. And the whole ship was us. It was nothing but church members. And we had services on the ship. We went to outings in various areas. We followed basically the journey of Paul, started up in Turkey and then down through the Greek islands. It was a very, very awesome trip. The people in 1991, however, didn't have such an awesome trip as we did. They encountered 40 knot winds and 9 meter swells. 9 meters is almost 30 foot high. With that type of wind and waves, it was doubtful that they were enjoying sitting on the chase lounges with the fluffy cushions on the back deck, as noted on slide 8, which is what we did. We also had a buffet meals out there. You could go out and sit around on the deck and eat your food or go in the dining room, but just wonderful. It was reported that the ship was in a state of neglected maintenance with loose hull plates and an unfitted ventilation system and pipe. It had also had several sewage holding tank non-return valves, basically check valves, stripped for repairs following problems with bilge water rising through the showers and the toilets on a recent trip to Mozambique. The unfitted ventilation pipe left a 10 centimeter 25 inch hole in the watertight bulkhead between the generator and the sewage tank. Remember the Titanic? Didn't have the bulkheads all the way to the top. This one had a hole in it, 25 inches. Because as we experienced when we got back to the port in Athens, you better get out of the way because the crew is off of the ship before you are. They are running off the ship. Why? Because they turn it around about 2 days. They get to see their family maybe 2 days, and then they're back on the ship for the next 10-day trip. So they have about 2 days to do the repairs as well. And it was in disrepair, and they chose to not make all the repairs that were necessary. As a result of the repairs not being made, seawater began to enter the ship, to rise and flow through the hole in the bulkhead and into the waste disposal tank. Yes, we're talking raw sewage. Without valves to close off the holding tank, the water coursed through the main drainage pipes and rose like a tide within the ship, spilling out of every shower, every toilet, and every waste disposal unit connected to the system. There was no stopping the onslaught of the flooding, and there was no hope for the Oceanus to keep from sinking. At about 9:30 p.m., a muffled explosion was heard, and the Oceanus lost power. The seawater and the sewage had spilled over in the engine room and killed the engines. Once the engines were stopped, the ship began to roll so badly that in the lounge, plates and cutlery began sliding off tables, and people had trouble staying upright, as you can see in slide 9. About day 3 of our journey, we also hit some rough waters. Not this rough. Not as bad as they experienced. We had stormy seas as well during services. And in this same lounge is where we held services. So where those people are slipping and sliding, we had services. You could look out the portals of the ship and we were being buffeted at the side by the wind, so we were rocking like this. You could look out one portal on one side of the room, see nothing but sky. You look out the other one, you see nothing but water. And we had 3 days of smooth sailing. So we took Dramamine, like a lot of other people. We had it with us. We got this down, no problem. Then we hit that. And it was really getting rough during services. We were having services that day. After a short time of the ship rocking back and forth as we were buffeted about by the stiff wind, people began to leave the main hall because of seasickness. I was an usher that day at the back of the hall, so I had to escort people from the back row of the seats out to the main area where they could go down the stairs or go up the stairs to their rooms. And there was a lot of people that left. I would say 30-40% of the congregation, as my memory serves, left just because of how rough it was. My wife's recollection, however, was the minister trying to hold onto the podium to keep from sliding across the floor when he's speaking. If you can imagine, okay, I hope I don't get you seasick, but if you can imagine, he's up here and the podium's going back and forth and his notes are going back and forth and he's trying to concentrate and read from the Bible and look at his notes. Much better speaker than I am. I can't complain. This is easy. It's solid ground. I'm not moving. And it's one thing, if you've never experienced that, you realize the helplessness that you feel when you're not on solid ground, when you're going through that. When you have experienced the unsteadiness of a storm at sea, you can better understand what the disciples went through in our first example. But also, let's look at Luke 8, another example of them going across. This time, Christ was with them. Luke 8, we'll read verses 22 and 23. Christ was with them, all right, but he was down below sleeping. Now, that also says something about the character of Christ, that he would had the ability to sleep during really stormy seas. Luke 8, we'll start in verse 22. Now, it happened on a certain day that he got into a boat with his disciples, and he said to them, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." And they launched out. But as they sailed, he fell asleep, and a windstorm came down on the lake, and they were filling with water and were in jeopardy or danger. So they also had water coming into their boat, and they knew that they could sink. We need to have faith that God will be there for us to calm the stormy spiritual seas in our lives. This world is so unstable, people are very concerned about the future. In fact, I read a recent study that the number one thing job seekers are looking for in a company is stability. And I can relate to that in the company that I worked for prior to where I am now. I had 7 managers in 7 years. And the last 2 years was the same manager. So it wasn't one manager every year. 7 managers, 7 years. Just incredible. If you feel like your life is rocking back and forth, and you are experiencing the seasickness from this crazy world in which we live, then we need to go to the one who calmed the sea, both physically and spiritually, as we see in verse 24. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, "Master, Master, we are perishing." And then he arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there was calm. When we need calm in our life, we know where we can go. We'll go to slide 10. There's a positive side, fortunately, a plus side to the sinking of the Oceanus, was that none of those 581 lives that I mentioned earlier were lost at sea. There was a massive rescue effort in place by ships in the area and helicopters from the South African Air Force. The ship sank bow first, approximately 45 minutes after the last person was airlifted from the deck. The final minutes of her demise were captured on video and broadcast by all the major networks around the United States. This was 1991, again, 2 years after we had been to feast. As you can see in slide 11, shows her upended and about to disappear below the surface. That is a picture that has been frozen in my mind, in my memory over the last 30 plus years since that event took place. For those of us who had sailed on that same ship 2 years prior, watching that on TV, watching it go down, and seeing the debris floating on the sea, in slide 12, all that was left was a debris. It was very emotional. I discussed it with the brethren that were there the Sabbath after we saw it on the news, and we all had the same sinking feeling. Okay, terrible pun. But it was in the pit of our stomachs when we watched that go under. I think as Christians, you just naturally imagine, you put yourself in the place of others. How would they feel? How would they feel with what I say, what I do? And we can imagine what it would have been like if we were there and on board that ship. After all, we sat in those same chase lounges with those soft, fluffy cushions that were the only thing left floating after the Oceanus disappeared beneath the surface of the ocean. I'd like to thank our sound crew. We'll discontinue the PowerPoint at this point. Brethren, what lessons can we learn from the sinking of the Oceanus? Unlike the Titanic, the damage that caused this ship to sink came internally. Though the major trials and occurrences in life that are external can cause our spiritual ships to sink, I think the day-to-day issues that we face that many times are internalized are some of the hardest challenges that we can endure in life. Few people other than the individual know about these internal struggles, and it can be difficult and sometimes uncomfortable for some of us to reach out to others for help when we feel like that. This is where we really need to rely on God for help in facing those internal struggles. If we don't, and they go unchecked, it can certainly lead to the sinking of our spiritual ship over the course of our lives. When I think back over the years to friends and families that have left God's church, was it the major trials in life that made most of them leave? Maybe once in a while, but more often than not, it seemed like to me that it was the smaller things that they went through in life that built up over time. Maybe an offense, whether real or perceived, from some other member that was never forgiven, or they were simply filled with doubt. I just can't make it into God's kingdom. I just don't have the strength to do it. Maybe they got tired of fighting the daily battles against the cold, cruel world and started taking on water and eventually upending and sinking. Were they doing the internal maintenance required to keep our spiritual ships in tip-top order? Or somewhere along the journey, did they let down? Did they let that maintenance go down, just like with the Oceanus? And the result was catastrophic. It might have been a lifelong struggle with a particular sin, or some type of substance abuse, or something else that they just couldn't overcome. They became very frustrated, lost patience, and just gave up, as they didn't believe they would ever overcome whatever those issues were in their lives. Some felt they were a failure as parents and continually beat themselves up over the way that they raised their children. I know several, couple of families that were like that. They just couldn't forgive themselves, even though God, and in many cases their children, had forgiven them for the mistakes that they had made many years earlier. We need to face our internal struggles and address them by asking God for help in overcoming. If they aren't addressed through prayer or fasting, the spiritual maintenance that is critical in our lives, they will build to the point that we will lose our way and no longer are navigating toward our goal of becoming a first fruit in God's kingdom. Christ tells us in Matthew 11, verse 28, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavily laden, and I will give you rest. We must go to him daily for that rest and comfort to maintain the internal, or should I say the eternal, integrity of our spiritual ship. One thing to note during the sinking of the Oceanus was that the Greek captain and many of the officers left the ship on the first rescue boat. On the first lifeboat that went away from that ship was the captain and many of his first officers. His reason, when questioned later at a tribunal, was to direct the rescue effort from the shore. He could do a much better job on the shore. Well, there was an inquiry later, and it determined that he and five of his first officers were guilty of one of the worst things that you can do as a captain of a ship, abandoning your passengers. Unlike those on the Oceanus, we have a captain that promises to never leave us, especially in those very trying and difficult times. Note what the author of Hebrews writes in chapter 13, 5 through 6, Hebrews 13, 5 through 6. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do? In a blog by Mike Bennett on Life, Hope, and Truth website, he noted the phrase, I will never leave you nor forsake you, is one of the most emphatic statements in the New Testament. In Greek, it contains two double negatives. It is like saying in English, I will never, ever, ever forsake you, according to Nelson's New King James Study Bible. We can take great comfort from knowing this is the case. But what if we constantly ignore God or push him away out of our lives because we're just too busy with the cares of this world? There is certainly a lesson that we can learn from the parable of the 10 virgins in Matthew 25. Without God in our lives as the captain directing our ship, we are dead in the water, just as the Oceanus was when it lost its engines. They lost their forward momentum, heading to their destination, when their engines failed and began to drift, to be tossed about by the waves. The same can happen to us. When you're dead in the water spiritually, you're no longer moving forward towards the goal of the kingdom. Then we cease growing in the grace and knowledge of God. You will instead be buffeted about by the treacherous winds and the waves of this world. And sooner or later, you too could have the same fate as the Oceanus. But of course, it's even worse when you sink spiritually because you're lost forever. In researching for this message, I found that one of the worst things I believe that can develop in us when we internalize the hurts or the pain of this world is bitterness. There's another Life, Hope, and Truth article that I referenced, Overcoming Bitterness by Steven Koenig. In it, he states the following. Those specializing in human behavior and mental wellness consider bitterness to be one of the most destructive and toxic human traits or emotions. That is mainly because bitterness generally comes from allowing the emotions of anger and hate, or possibly in some cases, fear and jealousy, to linger in our lives over a period of time. Bitterness has the power to destroy us from within and can negatively impact those around us in many ways. Sometimes hurts come through failed relationships with others or setting the bar too high for ourselves in our lives. We try to do too much for ourselves instead of relying on God and our perfect example, Jesus Christ. This can happen in our relationship with God. Instead of seeking and understanding his way, sometimes we can also get focused on our own wants and desires. Notice I didn't say needs. Our own wants and desires that we feel hurt and believe we're being treated unfairly when God doesn't give us those things. Bitterness is the opposite of God's way of thinking, and it can take us away from God. Hebrews 12:15 states, see to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many will become defiled. Bitterness defiles because it is a sin that can linger in our lives and separate us from God. It removes holiness and peace of mind from our lives. Continuing from Mr. Koenig's article, Paul writes to the Ephesians, "Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you." That's from Ephesians 4, verses 31 through 32. Isolation can feed this bitterness, which can not only alter your personality, but also damage your health, as well as your faith in God. Talk to a close friend or someone you know and trust, and certainly your pastor, if that's possible, to discuss those feelings of bitterness. Most important, pray. Pray to overcome bitterness and to pray to forgive others. Understand that it can take a while if you've harbored that bitterness for a long time, if the hurt is deep. Mr. Koenig concludes the article with this statement: "It is important to never lose our relationship and connection with God, no matter what." We should never lose that relationship. Well, there are many spiritual lessons that we can learn from the physical circumstances that led to the sinking of these two ships. The Titanic sank because of external damage from something outside of its control, while the Oceanus was from a lack of internal maintenance that led to vulnerability and then the failure of components meant to protect it from the water outside. Here's a quick summary of the lessons that we can learn from the demise of these two ships that I would like to leave you with to think about and to certainly pray about. Let God be your captain to guide your spiritual ship through this cold and evil world. Avoid becoming brittle spiritually. Be able to have elasticity, to flex or bend, but not break. Don't focus on the evil and the sin around you. Focus on your future in God's kingdom. Stay grounded in the truth. Have courage, perseverance, and a clear vision ahead. Build internal faith and endurance, living obediently to God's laws and doing His work. Don't allow internalized hurts or offenses to turn into bitterness, as noted earlier, a toxic emotion. And then finally, God says He will never, ever, ever forsake you. Trust in Him and believe in Him. I would encourage you to take these steps and refuse to let your spiritual ship sink by building faith in God, living His way of life, and by allowing Him to be your captain as you navigate the treacherous waters of this world.